Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Newsmakers Podcast. Today, we have a story of an individual who went from contractor to president of Climate Master. Dan Ellis will tell us about his journey and also share some insights into the geothermal market. Enjoy the talk, and we will see you on the other side. All right, now we're bringing in Dan Ellis, president of Climate Master, to talk a little bit about his journey from a contractor to the manufacturing world. How are we doing today, Dan?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. Why don't you start off just by telling our listeners how you got into the HVAC business?
Well, kind of a long story. Originally, I got into it because I was very interested in how to save energy. I was in college during the 70s and during the energy embargo, the oil embargo. So there was, it kind of impressed upon me this issue that there is a limited supply of energy, and this supply demand, we're at the mercy of other countries to supply our needs. At that point, we were importing a lot of oil, and I just wanted to do something about it. So I got involved from that background of trying to find ways to save energy, and realize, of course, everybody did, when you had oil heat, especially in northern Indiana, which is where I was from, a lot of the rural homes had oil furnaces. Their costs had skyrocketed, so the amount of energy they were using was high, and the cost of that energy had doubled and tripled, over a short period of time, and gotten their attention. So I got involved from that side, and I got involved trying to find ways to reduce that cost, and as a contractor, I was looking at solar at that point. Solar thermal systems were just, really becoming a little bit, kind of being rolled out a little bit on the mainstream level, but also we realized in Indiana that, during the winter it's cold and cloudy for, weeks on end.
Sure.
And there's not enough sun to do, much of your space heating. It's fine for hot water heating on a year-round basis. And we had come across this technology to use a heat pump to supplement the solar system. And that's really how I got involved in it, was combining water source heat pumps that use solar and the heat pump technology to provide all your need. And then over time, basically that evolved in realizing that the best solar collector we have is the earth itself. So eventually we didn't need the solar panels anymore. We just put more pipe in the ground and used the actual energy collection of the earth to be the source for the heat pump. And so I got involved that way, and I got involved selling and installing systems when there was a real heightened consumer awareness for energy. I mean, now there are home and garden shows, that every major city has, usually in the late winter, early spring. Back then, there were energy shows. Literally, they were called energy shows, and just as many people as show up at a home and garden show would go to these big events full of trade booths, full of ways to save energy, everything from window things to kerosene heaters to solar and so on. So there was a lot of demand and a lot of interest in doing something, and so I tapped into that and got so many leads and inquiries that I couldn't even handle them, which ultimately led to me setting up a distribution company to show other dealers how to do what I was doing.
Now, obviously, in today's days and age, we're very, energy conscious. But you're saying it was even more so back when you started in the early 80s?
Absolutely. It was more so. Now we've seemed to, we've accepted that there's, energy volatility and so on today. But there's not the shock factor there was that happened, with the oil embargoes of the 70s, when, there's been no time in recent history where you had to park your car at the gas station the night before to get it in a line to get some gas, and then, walk down there at 6 in the morning to,
right,
to get back to your car so you could fill up. So, I think there were some real shortages, and at the same time, that was the first time energy had been cheap for so long in the U.S., and suddenly there was this realization, number one, that, we were getting a lot of our energy from people that didn't like us very well, and number two, that the cost of it was very volatile. So, if that was being the first period of time where that happened, you got to remember what was going on then. The cars were huge. The American automaker cars in the late 70s were huge. Houses were not efficient. The heating and cooling systems were really not very efficient. Nobody paid a lot of attention to that back then. And then that changed everything kind of overnight. And so, you know, now I think there's, you know, a much higher level of awareness about energy efficiency and about, you know, doing things right, and it's become more common. But at that point, it was almost a reaction, you know, of the consumers to what was happening so quickly. I mean, if you remember, that's when all the Japanese, you know, automakers made such major inroads into our market because they had the small cars, Detroit didn't.
Right.
And, you know, and so literally the consumers changed overnight and Detroit didn't see it coming. And, you know, we've seen that on a smaller scale happen, you know, more recently when, you know, SUVs, big SUVs will be in vogue and then, you know, gasoline prices rise and suddenly, you know, you can't trade one in, you know.
Right.
So there's a little bit of that, but this was a blanket change then. So, yeah, it was even more heightened just because I think of the shock of it being the first time this had really happened to our country.
Okay. And what was the geothermal market like back then? How many people were aware of it? Obviously, it's got a lot of traction these days, but I was wondering what it was like in the early 80s.
Well, it was a whole lot different than what we look at today. I mean, first off, the most common geothermal system back then was what was called open loop systems, where you would actually use your well water, and a lot of rural homes had a well and a place for the water to go, and that could be everything from South Florida or along Florida along the beaches, which is kind of how geothermal heat pumps were actually born, to groundwater heat pump systems using their wells, you know, in the north. But there were a lot of limitations to the wells, and you know, I saw that early on. Even though northern Indiana was one of those regions blessed with plentiful groundwater, you know, there was no issue of a shortage around there. But it was obvious that not everybody had a well, not everybody had a place to put the water. In other words, when you discharge the water, you got to go somewhere, you know, and so some people didn't have a pond or a lake or whatever to put it into, or reinjection wells were problematic. And then there were a lot of water quality issues to be concerned about. So it just seemed like that there was no way the geothermal was going to take off, you know, based on that. So I got involved. I was one of the early pioneers of the closed loop systems, especially in northern climates, you know, and it was actually a technology that was put on the map by a Professor Bose at Oklahoma State University and some other professors that did some research and found, you know, some old textbooks from the 40s on how you could, you know, put pipe in the earth and exchange heat. So I heard about that. I can't remember exactly how I became aware of it, but I became aware of their work, and I grabbed a bunch of their materials, and my background was technical physics, and so I looked at all how they did the sizing, and I just started applying what they had done in Oklahoma, because it was very regional. It was basically some stuff going on in and around Oklahoma, to northern Indiana, which was a much tougher winter climate, a whole different situation, and started working with closed-loop systems using their guidelines and then kind of extrapolating those to our situation. One of the biggest challenges then were the heat pumps themselves. They were not designed, they were not designed to operate at low entering water temperatures. And if you do a horizontal loop system in the north, you're going to get down around 32 degrees in your piping loop, you know, if you're 4 to 5 feet deep. And so you have to have heat pumps that can operate down there. Now, they just weren't, it's not that there's a reason they can't operate there, it's just that they weren't designed for it. They didn't have expansion valves. They were usually cap tube machines. Those cap tubes were sized for the entering water temperatures of commercial, what are called water loop systems that use a boiler and a cooling tower, and they're kept usually between 60 and 90. So we didn't really have the right kind of heat pump. So, you know, one of the challenges I had when I got into distribution was we were buying heat pumps from a company in Texas called Command Air, and we had to modify every single heat pump to make it work down at 30 degrees. So we actually did those modifications in our shop. We actually took every unit out of the box, hooked it up, made these changes, tested it to make sure they were good, and so that's literally how hard it was back then. You know, all the parts and pieces, we had to assemble them, and then we kind of had, you know, I guess, you know, one of the things I got involved in early on was developing computer software, you know, back when nobody really even had computers. I had this little Radio Shack TRS-80 and, you know, and developed some software to size the ground loop and then to come up with an operating cost and compare that to other systems. And that was, you know, crude in the early stages, and it's something that slowly evolved and, you know, is still in use today, but is a crucial tool for geothermal is the sizing side of things. So it you had to be a little bit of a pioneer, you know, back then. And, you know, not everything we did early on turned out to be good. I mean, originally there was some work using, you know, cased, basically a concentric tube vertical loop, which is you drill a well with a casing on, you cap the bottom, so you got this PVC well casing that's plugged, and then you have a dip tube going down, and, you know, it worked great. It's just that the PVC, through the temperature changes, ultimately always cracked, and you ended up losing your heat exchanger. So
there you go.
We had to learn a lot of things the hard way, and we slowly solved those one by one.
Sure, some trial and error, huh? How did you transfer to manufacturing then?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, you know, I started out as a contractor. Then I had really so much business that there was no way my little garage shop could do it. So I partnered up with a much larger mechanical contracting business that had been around for a long time, called A. Hattersley & Sons there in Fort Wayne, and we set up a distribution division called Genesis Energy Systems. We started buying our products, you know, by the truckload, and then training other dealers, basically just training everybody to do what I had done, and showed them, you know, how to size them, helped them install them on the first ones to get them, you know, up and running. And our supplier was this company in Texas, Command Air, you know, saw this sudden spike of activity in a new area that they had only ever done the commercial system, so they weren't at all familiar with geothermal and a potential residential market. So it intrigued them, and there was an article that came out, you know, in 82 that ran in the news about what we were doing at Genesis and this distribution company. And it actually did a couple things. Number one, it kind of attracted, I received inquiries from all over the country wanting to get with us and figure out how to do what we were doing in their areas. So this all goes to that awareness that I talked to you about earlier. People were looking for ways. This looked like a very viable way, and I guess, you know, history's proven that it was, because we're all still here and, you know, doing very well now with geothermal. So it turned out to be right, but some people glommed onto it and said, you know, I want to do that. And so I saw, well, there was opportunities for other distributors. And the manufacturer had talked to me about going down there to head up a residential group, but moving wasn't something I wanted to do at that point. And I ran into another fellow named Dave Hatherton out of Canada, who was a driller who also had set up a distribution business for geothermal heat pumps in southern Ontario. And we got together and went to this manufacturer, and they basically, they gave us exclusive distribution rights into the residential market. So the first step we did toward manufacturing was to create a national brand through private label purchases from another company. And we got their products by then modified to a spec we wanted, that they would perform well, and, you know, things of that nature. Then, you know, just one of those events of the serendipitous events that happens, around 1985, one of an engineering firm that we had worked with on several large commercial projects was working closely with McQuay on some products and they said, you know, McQuay just got purchased by Snyder General and Dick Snyder, and they have a water source heat pump plant, Snyder General, already in Auburn, New York, and McQuay just set one up down in Stanton, Virginia, and they're not going to need both. You know, maybe you guys ought to take a look at whether you could acquire that. So so we basically did. We approached Dick Snyder and got with them and showed them how we weren't going to be competitors, because we were serving a completely different market, the geothermal market, and so they sold us their manufacturing capability. Which was not, you know, a huge setup. It was something new for McQuay, and it was, but it was an assembly line. They had the drawings, they had all the testing done, they had all the parts, pieces, and production line equipment, and we purchased all that and set up a manufacturing plant. So that's how we got into manufacturing ourselves. The reason we did, we'd actually tried to acquire the company in Texas, and the negotiations fell through, and in the process, the owner there, under the advice of financial advisors, decided that he needed to break our exclusive arrangement and start also marketing in parallel to us out there in the market. So we felt kind of forced to get into manufacturing. But fortunately, this ability to do so almost overnight through this McQuay acquisition really made that possible. So we went from distributor to manufacturer in a period of 3-4 months.
So probably nothing you had in mind when you first started out in the business, huh?
No, it wasn't. I mean, I got to say, I would have never thought that's where I would end up. But that's kind of how life seems to go. All I knew is that I guess if something was possible to do, and if bigger was better, I always thought, why not do it? So,
right.
I mean, if those doors opened, I went ahead and pursued them. I remember talking to the owner of Hattersley back then, who was an older gentleman that had ran that contracting business successfully for decades. And, his advice would always be, you don't always want to necessarily get bigger, but I was young and I didn't want to hear that kind of stuff. He said it just complicates your life. Looking back, I could see why he said some of those things. But at that point, if it could be done, I wanted to do it. And with heat pumps, if we could become national, we wanted to do it. If we could set up distributors and even in other countries, why not? And so we just, the sky was the limit. We just kind of pursued every opportunity to the fullest that we could possibly go after. And it created, a lot of success. And so because we were early on, a company and people that understood a market that was new and emerging, and I think that's one of the best things you can do in your success in life is be at the top of your field in whatever game you're in. If you can be at that cutting edge and be really good at what you do, then you can, and of course, if what you do is a good product, then, I think you can have a lot of success.
Sure. Let's look ahead a little bit. Where do you see the geothermal market going, both in the short term and long term, in terms of maybe advances or market share, that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, geothermal market has grown considerably over the last, 5-8 years. It's tripled, practically. But that growth has planed out over the last couple years. And that's mainly due to the economy. I mean, housing starts are a fraction of what they were. The geothermal business is still a little bit more heavily on the residential side than commercial. It's getting close to 50-50, but the residential was the part that originally drove geothermal, and the best place to sell geothermal is in a new house going up, because you got to buy a heating system anyway, and your yard's already just a bare piece of ground, so it's a good time to install the ground loop. Well, when new housing starts are down to below, 400,000 compared to, 1.6 million or whatever it was at the peak, that really slowed that part of it down. And so retrofits have really grown. Right now, geothermal is probably in the range of 60 to 70% retrofit on the residential side, changing out systems. The fact that we have tax incentives has really helped overcome the retrofit market because, on new homes, you generally have long-term financing already in the terms of a mortgage. And, when you put the additional cost of geothermal into your mortgage and you only have to compare the incremental cost between geothermal and what you would have done, you put all that together, geothermal made really pretty good sense for almost anywhere in the country for new homes. But for retrofits, the tax incentives have really helped get people's attention, and those are in place through the end of 2016. So as the economy strengthens, which is always somehow just around the corner, but it seems like now it's looking a little better again, mm-hmm. We've heard this before, but we think we're going to have some periods of really good growth again, and the commercial side is really coming on strong. The reasons there, I think, are just that more and more the design tools and the comfort level of the design and design firms is increasing for geothermal. There are just tens of thousands now of successful installations around the country, from everything from schools and office buildings, healthcare facilities, assisted living, multifamily housing, you name it, that, we are building a really strong base of successful systems that are exhibiting, at the metered level, substantially lower energy costs than most commercial buildings, typically less than $1 a square foot a year compared to, almost $2 in most other buildings. So significant energy savings that are being proven. So commercial is growing too. So, you know, I obviously, you can tell by all this, I'm pretty bullish about the future for geothermal heat pumps. We're not going to displace, you know, air-cooled equipment, you know, and be the dominant system out there. But what I do think is that, you know, we're going to go from, you know, taking in new homes, you know, maybe, you know, in the range of 5 to 10% of, you know, custom homes that would use geothermal today. We think we can increase that pretty dramatically. It wouldn't surprise me to see 20% of new homes using geothermal heat pumps, and a significant portion of replacements, and, you know, and increasing growth in the commercial marketplace. So I think that there is potential for our industry to double or triple again before 2016, if the economy improves. I mean, we are, you know, burdened with that right now. The potential for the technologies there, as the technology matures, the products are getting more efficient, and as markets mature, the cost to install the loop systems usually goes down. When new markets open up, you know, people are less familiar and don't have the right equipment and training to really get the pipe in the ground cost effectively. As the market gets more competitive, more people enter it, then the cost for installing the ground loops goes down. So that also really helps. And we are also learning more now about how to design systems, especially commercial systems, where you may have hundreds of boreholes in an array in the ground, how to manage that energy load so that instead of putting longer and longer ground loops in or more boreholes, we find ways to balance our loads other ways, you know, and which helps reduce installation cost again. So I think there's a bright future for geothermal heat pumps. One of the things that I love about this technology is it's so simple. I mean, it's not a complicated system. The unit is a complete package device that leaves the factory already completely assembled, tested, charged, with, you know, a run test sheet that shows that it's, you know, performs in heating and cooling. And so it's you've got all that going for you compared to systems that have to be assembled in the field and brazed together and evacuated and charged. You don't have to do any of that. And then, you know, commercially, let's just say this. You can scale geothermal heat pumps as a system, anything from one heat pump on one loop up to hundreds of heat pumps on one common large loop field in a commercial building. So it's a very scalable system, and yet each building block is a simple piece. And you can put these systems together, and there aren't a lot of complicated controls, a lot of complicated modulating valves and such that are very difficult to, you know, commission in commercial buildings. So you end up with a system that's very energy efficient, but you also end up with a system that's very simple to commission and to maintain. And building owners really like that, especially schools. That's been one of the biggest attractions for Geo, is that how easy the systems are for their maintenance people to manage. They're not complicated systems compared to, for example, a four-pipe system, you know, with fan coils or variable air volume boxes with all the controls and modulating devices and reheat and all the things that it takes to make a commercial system like that. This is just so much simpler, and it's actually more efficient.
We can feel your passion for geothermal. No wonder you've been riding this for quite some time. Sounds like it gets you excited.
Yeah, it still does. Still gets me out of bed in the morning, I can tell you that. Well, hasn't lost any of the appeal.
Great. Well, we really appreciate the insights, and you telling your interesting story there. If contractors listening to this want to learn more about Climate Master, where should they go?
ClimateMaster.com.
Okay, great, and they get all the information. Well, thanks again, Dan. We really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Hope everyone enjoyed the conversation. We'd love to hear someone who is passionate about their work. Thanks for listening. You can catch us on iTunes or echrnews.com. Good times, everybody.